You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Today is Saturday, January 9th, and today we're taking you inside the U.S. Capitol on the day protesters turned into rioters and stormed the building. You'll hear the experiences of two eyewitnesses.
We were told to put on gas masks.
The security guards started really grabbing furniture off of the House floor to make a barricade.
Then we examine what some are calling security failures. A former Capitol police chief will offer his insights. But we start with those firsthand accounts. The Washington correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Tia Mitchell, and Associated Press staff photographer Andrew Harnick. They were inside the House chamber doing their jobs when the chaos at the Capitol began. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. It's fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. It's time for today's Special Edition Saturday. You ready? Let's do this.
I was in the House chamber watching debate on Arizona's Electoral College votes.
I got a call from one of my editors who said that he was hearing that things were starting to escalate on the east side of the Capitol outside. And he just said, hey, if you could grab a camera and see if you can see anything from the windows, really within a matter of minutes of me photographing through the window, there was kind of a police line. And I could see that members of these protesters were trying to kind of break that line, that police line. And eventually they did. And they basically just poured onto the colonnade there at the door to the rotunda. And then I quickly heard sounds of breaking glass, shouting. And then there was a substantial explosion that went off. I would only assume that would be like a flash grenade thrown by either side. So we were basically running in the hallway around the House chamber to a door that was open. And they said, get in there. And they shut the door and locked it.
And we could hear the people banging on doors and see them trying to get in the chamber. You know, it just continued to escalate.
We were shoulder to shoulder with actual congressmen, and security started to get more and more concerned. And I could see at the main door of the House chamber, security guards were kind of, they had taken their foot and they were their feet, and they were kind of like trying to wedge their foot against the door to keep it from opening.
The banging on the doors, the rioters surrounding the House chamber and banging on doors trying to get in, that stuck out to me because at the time there were still members of the House in the chambers.
They told us to grab, they said there are emergency gas masks underneath all of your chairs. Go ahead and pull those out.
We were told to put on gas masks because there were rioters in the rotunda and police were using tear gas on them.
While everybody was doing that, the security guards started really grabbing furniture off of the House floor to make a barricade and basically prevent that door from opening. Protesters who had turned into rioters, you know, they had not gone through any security checkpoints. So, you know, the security was very concerned. Tensions were high in the room. Congressmen wanted to get out of there. And, you know, we were basically locked in there.
That iconic photo many people have seen of Capitol police officers with their guns drawn and behind a piece of furniture that barricaded the door. And you could see the protesters trying to knock out the window and get inside the chamber. I saw that with my own eyes.
There were officers shouting for members of Congress to get down on their hands and knees and tuck their head and, you know, keep their heads down between the seats. That was a surreal moment. You know, there was some fear. There was some anger from members of Congress. And there were some who were basically taking charge and helping members of the police. We started hearing a popping sound. People on the other side were smashing that glass to try to get into the House chamber. At that point, they evacuated the House floor. A member of Congress had enough foresight to you know, say, take your pins off. That signifies that they are a member of Congress. so that, you know, if they came face to face with somebody, that they couldn't immediately identify them as a member of Congress.
When they were able to evacuate us from the chamber, we had to walk past where they had taken the rioters and subdued them, had them laying on the floor face down with police standing over them with guns drawn.
Eventually, they opened the door and escorted us all down the stairs to the basement and out of the Capitol building to House office buildings, where members of the media eventually found a congressman's office who let us in and just kind of let us stay there for a few hours.
It wasn't until we were evacuated from the chamber and put inside another building and could watch on CNN the scene outside the Capitol that I really understood what had happened, the scope of what had happened, the number of people that had surrounded the Capitol. I don't think law enforcement and congressional leaders had fathomed that these protests could turn to people trying to infiltrate, you know, burst their way into the Capitol, vandalize the Senate chambers, bust down windows and doors, you know, to desecrate the U.S. Capitol, especially people who, if you ask them, would call themselves patriots. I just don't think that's something people planned for or expected.
You know, when you're in the moment and it's a tense situation, you're really, our job is to cover what's happening in front of us, and you just focus on the work, and you really don't give yourself that chance to kind of think about what's happening.
The moments were scary, but I didn't have time to be scared. You know, it was chronicling the moment. It was observing the moment to make sure we could record it for history. I knew that what was happening was important. I knew that what was happening was newsworthy. And so that was kind of what my focus was.
Many hours later, they opened the Capitol building back up to members of Congress and members of the media who had been covering the day. And we were allowed to return to the building. The House began debate again. The Senate began debate again. It's a long procedural day for Congress to go through the Electoral College votes. So they still had, even after all of this, they still had 4 or 5 hours of work to do. During the late, late hours, around 1 a.m., I just walked around the building, which was quiet, just to take photographs of the damage. And I found a young congressman in the rotunda with a big trash bag, and he was just picking up debris, damage, and trash in the rotunda. And heavily, heavily armed ATF police agents pitched in to help him clean up. Just thought that was a touching moment. But, you know, over the course of the day, there were some nice moments, members of Congress kind of touching each other's arms and kind of trying to reassure them during the most tense times. More often than not in politics, when the debate is over, you know, people treat each other with more dignity and respect than you'd think.
So what went wrong? How was this allowed to happen at all? Next up, hear the perspective and insights from former U.S. Capitol Police Chief Terry Gaynor. He also served as the U.S. Senate Sergeant of Arms, two of the top security positions at the Capitol building. But first, let's take a break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Noom. Noom says if you want to lose weight, it's not about one thing you ate today, but how you eat in general. Noom teaches you about eating, your cravings, and how to build new habits so you can ditch your misconceptions and get smart about food and the choices you make. Yes, Noom focuses on healthier habits, feeling good about your choices, and having an improved sense of self-worth and mood. And Noom says it wants to work with your lifestyle so you don't have to commit to a rigorous plan or feel bad about going off track for just a day. Based in psychology, Noom teaches you why you make the choices you do and gives you the tools you need to replace your habits with healthier ones. And since everyone is busy, that's why Noom does not demand much of your time. They only ask for 10 minutes a day. So sign up for your trial today at Noom, N-O-O-M, Noom.com/newsworthy. There's a science to getting healthier. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/newsworthy. That's Noom.com/newsworthy. Also, thanks to our sponsor, Rothy's. I'm sure you've heard of this company by now, but if not, they make stylish shoes, bags, and masks that are also sustainable. Yes, Rothy's make shoes and accessories out of plastic water bottles, and they're completely machine washable. So whenever you need a refresh, just throw them in the wash. It's that easy. In fact, I have a pair of red Rothy's flats that I love, and I've been wearing a ton even since last winter, and they're still just as stylish, comfortable, and durable as they were back then. I've also since bought the Lace Up later in 2020. Their best-selling shoe, though, is the Point in Black, and it's no surprise it has more than 3,000 near-perfect reviews. Plus, Rothy's products come with free shipping and free returns on eligible items, so you can buy without worry. Check out all the amazing shoes, bags, and masks available right now at rothys.com/newsworthy. That's Rothy's, R-O-T-H-Y-S, rothys.com/newsworthy. Style and sustainability meet to create your new favorites. Head to rothys.com/newsworthy. Okay, now here's my conversation with former Capitol Police Chief Terry Gaynor. Chief Gaynor, thanks for coming on the Newsworthy.
Erica, I'm glad to have the opportunity. I hope I can be instructive for everybody.
From what you know so far and from what you watched unfold on Wednesday, how do you think that it did get to the level that it did? And what was your reaction to see that happen?
Well, Erica, number one, I was stunned because I wouldn't have thought for a minute that people could storm and get inside of the Capitol. And as it got worse, as it unfolded, I felt sicker about it. How it happened on first blush, without going through a lot of records and looking at tapes and timelines and all that, it would appear clearly that there were not enough officers to respond to that big a group. So it would appear to me that notwithstanding what intelligence they may have had before, how you would have been watching and listening to what's going on for weeks ahead of an event like this, they underestimated the size of the crowd that would come from the Ellipse up to the Capitol. They underestimated how violent they were, and I don't think appreciated how President Trump and his son and Giuliani revved the crowd up and shouting things like trial by combat. They didn't have a sense of what that meant. Erica, I know they were on days off, 12-hour shifts. I know they've had COVID-19 problems like everybody else, but the deployment was pitiful. The request for help and backup from other departments appeared too slow, but we're going to have to go point by point through each one of those things when a good solid scrub of this event has been done.
I'd love to just hear your reaction to the Capitol Police Chief resigning effective next week.
Well, I feel bad for him because I know Chief Steve Stunn. He used to work for me as my chief of staff when I was the assistant chief of the D.C. Police Department, and we were very happy they became chief of the Capitol Police. He's a great man. He's done a lot of super things, has over 30 years in law enforcement. But I do understand the responsibility of command and where the buck stops.
Were there any moments that you were watching on Wednesday that really stood out to you?
Well, it's a combination of things. Again, having been a policeman for 40 some years in multiple jurisdictions, I've been in these Donnybrooks and 50 fisticuffs, and they're difficult situations. So I saw the officers were trying. I saw they were overwhelmed. I felt sick for them. But also, having spent so much time in the Capitol in various capacities and what that Capitol building means to the United States, to global democracy, to the world, it crushed me to see those anarchists and hooligans and foolish people doing crazy things in the chambers and sitting in members' chairs and tossing offices and trying to steal furniture. It was against everything we've stood for, and most importantly, the officers who do 20 and 30 years up there stood for. It was crushing. I have been in contact with officers. They're sending me emails. They feel sick. They feel like they let themselves down and the country down. So everybody takes this personal because they believe in the Capitol and what they were doing.
We did see images of some officers being overwhelmed, doing their best, but just not having the ability to stop some of these larger crowds. On the flip side, there has been some video and images circling online that I haven't personally verified, but some of them show an officer taking a selfie with someone inside the Capitol building. What's your take on those?
Well, on those, I haven't seen that image. It's certainly been brought to my attention enough time, and I don't want to sound overly defensive, but it would not be unusual, as you have seen across the United States at some of these large protests where police officers would kneel in support with the group, or they'd walk with people in support of their cause, or they would take selfies of each other. They participated in the event. My hope is that if this happened within the Capitol with people who should not have been in there, and if those officers felt they could help calm the situation by trying to be friendly with these people and calm it, I get that. If these officers were just joking around and trying to be cute, they need to be held responsible for that.
But there are a lot of people saying, you know, if these protesters turned rioters were Black or Muslim, that this would have ended differently. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do have a lot of thoughts, again, because it's a conversation that's been ongoing about how law enforcement interacts with people of color. And police leaders and police officers have been trying to overcome in any number of jurisdictions how they can be better partners with communities where there's distrust, especially towards people of color. So I've been in conversations with about this. I heard this. Chief Chuck Ramsey, an African-American chief, he and I were partners in Chicago for a long time. I worked for him in D.C. He worked for me for a time. He sees that as one of the problems. In conversations with him on CNN recently, I said, Chuck, I just didn't see it that way. I know there is individual bias in everybody, and I suspect there's racists within the police business. I do not think the department is racist. So in my heart, I want to believe that, but I also know this. Chief Ramsey is an experienced individual who's lived as a Black man in America and as a 40-year law enforcement officer. And when he and others feel that this is a problem, it tells me enough there's got to be more conversation about it.
Anything else you want people to know about this situation from a law enforcement perspective?
Yeah, there is an upside to this, and it's lost in everything else. That one of the primary responsibilities of those Capitol Police officers is to protect lives in the process. And notwithstanding how ugly it looked, they ultimately regained control of the Capitol. They protected the constitutional leaders that were up there, the vice president, and then the third and fourth in line for the presidency, the Speaker of the House and the Senate pro tem, and they protected all the members, got them out safely. They protected the staff that was in there, although clearly they were frightened. They recaptured and swept the Capitol so the legislative process could begin.
What happens from here? You know, how are things going to look different, if at all?
Well, they've already put up a partial fence. There'll be a review. I mean, they're holding the three top people in the security business responsible by moving them out of their jobs and in fact, firing them. With a review, then, hopefully it won't happen again. But the other portion of this, there's some question about why weren't there more arrests. I know this. Generally, in these large events, whether it's this or any other, slowing down to make an arrest, when you can take good pictures and have a lot of film and a lot of video and get them later, sometimes is a very sensible thing to do. Making arrests of large groups is very labor intensive and wrought with problems. So given the amount of video and fixed cameras up there and all the things on social media and even some of these rioters posting their own things, I already know that the U.S. attorney and the FBI and the agents of the Capitol Police are working hard to round some of these people up. So it is my hope that there'll be indictments coming on those. And it is my hope that the Justice Department will take a close look at the sitting president, as well as the likes of the former mayor of New York and the president's son. Now, that's not piling on. That's response and trying to tell people you cannot incite riots, no matter what lofty position you think you're in, and walk away unscathed.
All right. Thanks for listening today. If you found this episode valuable, please consider sharing it with a friend or on social media. And you can tag us at Newsworthy Pod. And thanks to all three of our guests who joined us for this episode. Learn more about them in our episode notes on thenewsworthy.com. And we'll link to the journalists' social media accounts where you can see pictures they posted during all the chaos. As always, you can get all the day's news in just about 10 minutes with our regular episodes Monday through Friday. So we'll be back on Monday with your next news roundup. Until then, have a great weekend.